Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. This week we're joined by T3's Rick Henderson, who'll be helping us unpack everything Apple announced at WWDC, from the all-new AI-powered Siri to the latest updates coming to iPhone, iPad, Mac and Apple Watch.
It's been a crazy week. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say we're going to dig into all of it.
It's been mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if this week hasn't been tech-packed enough for you, we're also running through all of my favorite announcements from last week's Summer Game Fest. So it's crazy, this episode.
Before we get into all that, though, a quick word from our friends at CEX.
Yeah, if you love tech, going to a CEX is an event. You walk into one of their stores and you'll find everything from the latest smartphones and gaming consoles to cameras, laptops, smartwatches, and, of course, plenty of retro tech, too.
Yeah, whether you're after a current-gen console, a premium camera, a flagship phone, or something a little bit more nostalgic, there's always something interesting to discover.
And because it's not all brand new, you can often pick up tech for a lot less than you'd expect.
Everything is tested before it goes on sale, so you can buy with confidence.
Plus, every item comes with a 5-year warranty, which is better than you'll get with most brand new tech.
And if you're wondering how CEX manages to keep its shelves so well stocked...
Yeah, especially when I'm around, that's where... you come in. If you've got old phones, consoles, tablets, laptops, other gadgets lying around at home, CEX will buy them from you for cash or even more in-store credit.
So your old tech could help you fund your next upgrade while giving someone else the chance to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's good for the wallet, good for the planet, and a great excuse to finally sort through that drawer full of forgotten cables.
So visit webuy.com or pop into your local CEX store and see what treasures you can find. Firstly, if you've ever found yourself listening to us while driving, walking the dog, mowing the lawn, pretending to work, or hiding from your family for half an hour.
All, you know, excellent life choices.
Yeah.
Secondly, make sure you're following the podcast.
That way, whenever a new podcast lands, it'll be sitting there waiting for you like a freshly unboxed gadget.
Nice. Anyway, enough of that. Let's get on with the reason we're all here.
So what's been making you think this week, Jase?
Well... pretty much games, almost exclusively. So loads of, you know, really important events. Obviously, Xbox's 25th anniversary event, which I will touch on. But Summer Game Fest, I think we've not talked about that, Susie. That's done and dusted for another year. And I have to say, it was probably the biggest and most exciting showcase that I can remember seeing. It was absolutely superb. Certainly since the glory days of E3, which I used to attend.
Yeah.
God, that flight to America was not something I missed. But I used to love, you know, getting access to all the latest innovations in the gaming industry. So what have we got? The biggest stories. The headline announcement for many fans was the return of a genuine horror classic. Capcom finally revealed a full remake of Resident Evil Code Veronica. Now reimagined as Resident Evil Veronica. And the reaction online was very positive, I think. This has been on fans' wish lists for years. And judging by the trailer, I mean, I'm not the world's biggest Resident Evil expert. I played the original games on my PlayStation. But from what I could tell, it looks like Capcom are set to continue a pretty incredible run of Resident Evil remakes. Next up, a really exciting announcement that came from Sega and Creative Assembly after, you know, loads of rumours and years of speculation. Alien Isolation 2 is on the way, and I am so here for it. As you're going to find out, there have been so many great games announced in the last couple of weeks or so, but this is a huge title for me. It's so good. It's possibly one of the scariest games I've ever played. This second game is going to take place on a remote kind of storm-ravaged colony. So that's quite nice. Feels a bit Aliens in that sense. There is a shot of a flamethrower, which is quite cool. So maybe some more weaponry. So the original game was, yeah, one of the most terrifying games ever captured. And if the sequel captures even half that tension, then we're in for something really, really special. One reveal that really caught my eye came from the team behind Shadow of the Colossus and The Last Guardian. Their new project is called Gen Atlas, and it looks absolutely incredible. Kind of giant robots, one tiny robot, one massive robot, some real scale to it. Looks really, really interesting. A lot of people were talking about how beautiful it looked, and had, you know, thousands of people like me scouring YouTube for clips from the announcement. And big headliner for those of us with a retro interest, Sega decided it was time for another nostalgic hit and have brought back Crazy Taxi. So I remember playing Crazy Taxi around, would it have been the year 2000-ish, I think, on my Dreamcast. Crazy game. So yeah, Crazy Taxi, superb, graphically enhanced, all kinds of new environments to bomb around. And yeah, I'm not overawed by it. It's not a game, Susie, that I'm getting super excited about, but it's always nice to see a classic title reinvigorated. Mm-hmm. One thing became very clear throughout Summer Game Fest, and that is that horror games are absolutely taking all of the headlines between Resident Evil, the Alien that I mentioned, Silent Hill, Until Dawn, and several brand new horror IPs. Developers seem determined to keep us absolutely scared beyond our wits. And witness, again, I'm here for all
the
of
word
it.
You were looking
witness,
for.
Scared,
witness, scared, witless.
Spelt with an S. Spelt with an S. And of course, this year also marks a huge milestone for Xbox. So they had this really great, I thought it was a great Xbox 25th anniversary event where we got to see more of Master Chief because Halo Campaign Evolved, I always want to say Combat Evolved, which is the name of the original, is coming very, very soon and looks absolutely superb. I'm doing this from memory. I think there's four new missions within the old campaign environment, modern, you know, graphics, and that entire iconic environment, those characters, the warthog, the those hovering alien machines. I can never remember what anything's actually called. I'm amazed I even remembered warthog. I remember sitting in a life-scale version of the warthog at one of the Halo launches. I played Halo to death, and I'm so excited. It looks like it's going to be every bit as good as we anticipated when it was announced. Well, when was it? A year ago? I can't remember, but it's looking really, really good. But of course, the biggest announcement at the 25th anniversary Xbox event was that they're bringing back the translucent green Xbox, which is super exciting. I've got the crystal there in some boxes behind me. I did a little social media post about it, and you can see it on X if you're interested. So I've got the translucent crystal one, but the translucent one in green, which I do remember from back in the day, with a controller you can buy separately, does look really, really exciting. Wow! I mean, just incredible.
So much packed in there. 25 years of Xbox seems extraordinary, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
And obviously, horror having a moment, as you say.
Yeah, brilliant.
My story this week comes courtesy of Wired, Jace, and it's one of those stories that confirmed all of my suspicions about smart AI glasses, which people keep asking me in the street about now. Because Meta's quietly removed facial recognition code from the companion app used with its Ray-Ban smart glasses. But the reason it's making headlines is Wired discovered the code was there in the first place. So according to the investigation, Meta had embedded an unreleased system internally known as NameTag into its Meta AI app, which has been downloaded millions of times, as you can imagine. Now, the feature wasn't active, but the code suggested it was designed to recognise faces seen through the glasses, create biometric profiles, and identify people the wearer had previously encountered. So you know what we're saying here. You're walking through an airport, a conference, a party, just down the high street. Someone wearing a pair of smart glasses can potentially know exactly who you are simply by looking at you. Personally, find it terrifying. I don't even like it. I mean, obviously, we've been on the telly for years and people come up and, you know, I find that disconcerting. So this as a blanket is really scary. Now, Meta says that the feature was never switched on and insists that no decision had been made about launching it. Yeah. Okay, but it was there. But what made this story so interesting is that after Wired published its findings, Meta pushed out an update that removed almost all traces of the facial recognition system from the app. The company hasn't really explained whether that removal was always planned or whether the publicity accelerated things. And that is where the debate starts. On one hand, you can see legitimate uses. So just to play devil's advocate, for example, helping people with memory issues, recognizing friends and family, or providing accessibility features for visually impaired users. But on the other hand, Facial recognition in everyday wearable devices raises enormous privacy questions. Unlike CCTV cameras, smart glasses are portable, discreet, and increasingly becoming more common. Privacy campaigners have warned that combining AI with facial recognition could normalize a level of public surveillance that we've never really experienced before. What's fascinating is that this isn't really a story about a feature that exists today. It's a glimpse into where consumer technology could be heading next. Because if AI glasses are going to become the next smartphone, and plenty of companies seem to think that they will, and you know, you've talked endlessly about this as well, then the question isn't whether facial recognition is technically possible. It's whether we are comfortable living in a world where anyone might be able to identify anybody else by just looking at them. And I suspect that that's a conversation that we're going to be having a lot more over the next few months and years. I can actually see camera facilities being removed from glasses and then being audio-only AI offerings. That is something that I might be able to get on board with. But the cameras, as you know, I've always had a massive issue with this.
You've been really consistent. Well, it's a difficult one. I think you and I have slightly different views on this, and I think that's really healthy and really important. Not least the fact that my timing couldn't have been better or worse, in that this week, everyone listening and watching, I went into an optician's.
Oh, yeah.
It's a friend of mine's optician, and they had the Oakley version of the Meta glasses, Susie, and I did a video filming myself in a mirror. And it was really funny because the reaction was really positive, because they're like really beautiful looking things.
Yeah, they look good.
But there was one little name there on my Instagram feed going, oh no, with a horror face, albeit with some smiley faces as well, from Susie Perry.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because you did make me stop and think a little bit, because I was so enthusiastic about it. I hadn't thought, actually, there are a lot of people that are very much tuned into the story that you've just talked about, it might have broken, but I wasn't aware of it. And the timing was perfect, because there I was jumping up and down saying, isn't this an amazing feature? I can film with my glasses. The quality is really good. And then Wired, with a standout bit of research, I mean, fair play to Wired magazine. Very important that we've got people like that standing guard.
Yeah,
and again, I have to say, you know, you're absolutely bang on the ball with this. And I think you made a really, really good case. So one to watch for the future.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about something we've all probably dreamed about at one point or another.
Being locked inside a CEX overnight with an unlimited budget?
Yeah, exactly. Well, perhaps not unlimited, but pretty close, because one of our Patreon listeners is about to win a £5,000 tech shopping spree at CEX.
And we've been having a little think about what £5,000 would actually get you these days.
Yes, okay, so for starters, you could pick up a top-spec gaming PC, a massive OLED TV, and still have enough left over for an next-gen console and a stack of games.
Or if you're into photography, you could walk away with a professional camera body, a couple of lenses, and enough accessories to make you look like you've got a job at National Geographic.
Maybe you're a retro gaming fanatic. £5,000 could buy you an incredible collection of classic consoles, rare games, and enough nostalgia to keep you busy until retirement.
Or perhaps you'd go all in on Apple. A MacBook, an iPhone, an iPad, an Apple Watch, a pair of AirPods with change to spare.
Or you could build the ultimate home cinema, huge TV, surround sound system, Blu-ray collection, games console, streaming box, basically your own private multiplex. We're giving one lucky listener the chance to go on the ultimate tech shopping spree.
And remember, this isn't one of those competitions where you're up against millions of people. It's exclusively for our Patreon supporters.
Yeah, which means the odds of winning are very good. And as a bonus, our friends at T3 are also throwing in a year's subscription to the magazine.
Plus, when you join Patreon, you'll also get ad-free episodes, early access, bonus content, and access to one of the best communities of gadget lovers anywhere.
Absolutely. And if you're on our max tier, you'll also unlock the entire Gadget Show archive. That's nearly 20 years of gadgets, reviews, challenges, and Susie in a cat suit.
So if you'd like the chance to turn your dream tech shopping list into reality, head over to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and sign up. All the details and full terms and conditions are linked in the episode description. Joining us again on the podcast is Rick from T3, and he's here to talk all things Apple after their recent WWDC press conference earlier this week. Rick, hello, it's great to have you on. Are you okay?
Yeah, all good. It's been quite a busy week in the world of technology.
Mad, isn't it?
I know, it's been crazy because we've also had Summer Games Fest as well as WWDC.
And Xbox 25.
It's great to have you back on the pod. Before we get into WWDC, the last time you were on the podcast, you said that while the Switch 2 was a great console, it was still missing those killer games that would make the upgrade feel essential. So at the time of recording this episode, Nintendo has just dropped a whole raft of Switch 2 announcements, including, which you wanted, Zelda, Nintendo Switch Sports Resort, Kingdom Hearts, and the next Fire Emblem. Has that changed your view at all? Or are you still waiting for that one game that really justifies the purchase?
No, I think actually it answered a lot of my questions. I mean, some of the things I said last time, though, was about the accessories as well, and there was nothing about that whatsoever. But the gaming lineup does look much stronger this year coming up. Certainly, funny enough, I mean, Zelda was a very brief tease. It is fantastic. Again, it's another remake. We were talking about the Star Fox thing. It is a remake, but it looks like it's going to be a remake that's totally different from the original and something very well worth playing. But it was the Sports Resort announcement that, funny enough, that made me think while I was watching it about what we were talking about before, because we were talking about the sports and it was talking about family gaming using motion. And it's exactly that. I'm not sure how thumb wrestling is a sport, but
real wrestling is great. But I've got teenage boys, and I can recommend that. I hire them out for people just to let off a bit of steam, you know.
but the game is they're kind of doing exactly what we wanted.
Do you want to get stuck into Apple then? Because obviously we've got loads to crack on with.
Yeah, certainly. WWDC. It was a weird show. Now, traditionally for me, a WWDC keynote is Tim Cook, or prior to that, Steve Jobs, getting up on a stage and addressing a live audience with all the latest things coming up for iPhone, Mac, and the rest of the devices. And this time they went for the thing that they've been doing very recently with all launches, which is a pre-made video with lots of effects and very swishly put together.
But it, in the garden.
It sucked a lot of the energy out for me. And what I found most surprising about that is this is Tim Cook's last hurrah. He's stepping down as CEO. John Ternus is taking over in September. So we expect him to launch the new iPhones. So I expected it to be a bit more of a bigger affair. And Tim Cook was barely even in it. Maybe that was on purpose. Maybe that was him sort of saying, it's no longer about me. It also felt like, Apple 3 years ago announced Siri AI. And it didn't happen. It stumbled along for 3 years, and we got to this stage, and I get the feeling they didn't want to make a misstep. They didn't want to do a live demo. Who does? So show that it doesn't actually, it might not work on stage, because it is early days. I think they just wanted it to be swish and punchy and to give you some of the features that are coming. But there was a hell of a lot missed out as well. So that was that's my summary of WWDC's keynote in a nutshell.
I think physically there's an issue. Sorry to cut you off. There's also I just felt from a performative point of view in terms of a piece of theatre compared to say the Xbox event, which felt passionate to me and real.
Yes.
And there was blood pumping through the veins. There were people who were genuinely, I forget her name, I feel really...
Yeah, the new Xbox CEO are you talking about? Yeah. Asha Sharma.
Asha, yeah. She was genuinely bubbling over with excitement. When she talked about Gears of War, I know that her background is not that of a thoroughbred gamer, but she talked about Gears of War like she enjoyed playing it. And this sort of controlled... weird avatar, almost Mark Zuckerberg like version of various Apple employees, who kept shifting on their haunches and doing really weird things with their hands. It was very odd. It was like they were in the Vision Pro And it was that avatar thing that you get when you do a FaceTime.
I actually got the impression that, I at one point made me giggle because it looked like it was being presented by AI. It looked like AI
that's
models.
That's exactly what I thought, Rick. And you've got, and I thought it was poorly put together as well. And you'd like, there was one guy and he just kept walking. I'm like, what are you doing? Where are you walking to? Stop walking and just tell us.
And look, not everyone is a TV presenter.
No, I know, but I can't concentrate on what they're saying.
Yeah, and not everyone is a natural performer. That's fine. And so you don't put them in a pair of slacks in a weird lounge, which I was trying to work out. Is that a real lounge or is it a background? Is it...
Yeah.
Green screen lounge. And then he sort of does that and this, and then I'm sort of moving my hands, people listening to the podcast, in a rather awkward way. And what you do is you sit them down and then you get someone who's a professional communicator to interview them. That's a more honest, transparent way of communicating information. And then it becomes more believable. And then the other person can kind of imbue some life, some passion, some heart.
Well, this is where this is where Steve Jobs excelled, going on stage and presenting the newest devices or the newest gadgets or the newest software. It just felt exciting every time he took to the stage. Mm. And unfortunately, without doing that, without doing a live audience, without having that stage presence, without even the sort of like the peril of something going wrong, it just felt flat. And unfortunately, the one thing that Apple really needs right now, let's face it, they are one of the richest companies in the world. They are certainly not short of cash and they are not short of people wanting to buy their products. But you do get the feeling that they are playing catch up. And this is a specific thing to this WWDC with the Siri AI and the Apple Intelligence improvements, is that they are playing catch up. They are definitely playing catch up. They've even had to turn to Google to play catch up with Google's own AI systems.
And this is massive, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, huge. And the one thing that I got from it, and now I am excited about Siri AI. I am excited about the new changes coming to iOS 27. And I am looking forward to trying them out when we get them on our devices. But they have had to turn to a rival who has a lot more experience in this area and who has been doing it for a good 2 years, 3 years, in fact. And Gemini is very, very good and very, very rounded on Android devices, if you've ever used it. So, and a lot of the features that they were announcing for Apple was in the typical Apple way. We've invented this new thing that you've been using for 3 years. So, so it did feel like, it needed a bigger show, or it needed something to say, look, we're here and we are doing this now and it's going to be brilliant. That said, you know, there were some parts of it that I think once people get it in their hands, they'll actually go, this is brilliant. This is really, really good. And this will improve my life. And that is an overall AI thing rather than just Siri AI. Is that AI is changing. It's changing.
It's almost like, Rick, and Susie will absolutely love this, that we don't need phones. What we need is glasses. And I say that because having apps on glasses, especially glasses that don't have a display, is a pointless thing. A vocal interface is all you need, with audio feedback and an AI running everything. And I say that to a man wearing...
Yeah, indeed. I'm wearing the...
Ray-Ban Meta.
Yeah, I'm wearing the new Ray-Ban Meta.
The world's
optics.
Biggest fan, also on the call, Susie, of said headwear.
Yeah.
Look, I think they look great. They look great. And what concerns me is always the privacy thing.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think... I would mention this to Jace earlier, being a woman, it's a different situation as well to being a man, with knowledge of what people know about you. Let's not get into that debate again. However, it does feel like where it's going now, consumer AI and what we're going to be able to do, is setting up glasses. It does feel like it's a sort of precursor, doesn't it, for them being able to operate in the realm that, you know, Jason, you want them to operate in.
Do we think September still? Did we talk about this last time? I can't remember, but it felt like they were setting the stage for an announcement that could be coming September for a potential 2027 Apple glasses release.
I think they will be they're certainly working towards it. We know this. So too many rumours have come out of Apple for it not to be happening. Also, with Samsung now entering the market, with Google on tow, these are the Meta Ray-Ban optics that I'm wearing, the Blazer model, and I've also tested the Meta Display version. I've also got a pair of the Evan G2 glasses, smart glasses.
Oh yeah, what are they like?
Which are very interesting. I mean, they're the ones that are tied in with 007 First Light, the new James Bond game. He's going to be wearing them in the forthcoming downloadable content. So, and I'm currently testing those as well. So, there are glasses.
Another synergy with you and James Bond, right there, Rick.
I used to write for the official James Bond magazine many, many years ago. So, I'm a massive fan anyway. But yes, glasses is definitely an area. And funny enough, it was one of the announcements at WWDC that I found most interesting was almost queuing up for the glasses, and that was something to do with the visual intelligence that's come into the camera app. And in that camera app, Siri AI will be used to recognize things through your camera, your phone camera. So for example, you can point it at one of the examples I used was you can point it at a receipt of a restaurant bill, and it will instantly see everything on that, recognize on everything on that, and you can choose which items you had and which items someone else had and easily split the bill with them through Apple Wallet. Again, that agentic AI working across apps to sort of like come up with an ultimate solution.
The thing that they do, the thing they've always done to make my point from earlier is they look at real world scenarios and they make them a feature in a way that other providers often miss. So they're very tech-centred, whereas Apple are very human-centred. And that's what's going to happen. There'll be some... It's like the stories about people falling over in the forest and their Apple Watch, you know, dialing the emergency services. They're very good at understanding that human-tech relationship.
What, Dan, the other thing... Yeah, and what Apple are very, very good at, where sometimes the Android ecosystem kind of throws so much at you that you get a bit confused. Apple's very good at distilling it down to the basics so that it introduces features gradually and slowly so that people learn with their devices. I think what we'll see is a hell of a lot more than what we've learned so far, launched this September. And let's face it, we're going to get a brand new phone as well. I do think that there'll be more features coming with Apple Intelligence and Siri AI. But what we've seen so far, they're very much crowd-pleasing features. They're things that you can instantly say, oh, I'd use that. And that's what Apple are really good at.
They're everyday features, aren't they, that can help out? Yeah, yeah. But depending on where you live, right? Because some of those features aren't available in the EU yet.
Yeah, there was a fear that that would include the UK, but the Siri AI is not going to be available neither in the EU or China. I'm sure all our Chinese listeners will be devastated. But in the EU, the biggest problem is the Digital Markets Act. And what Apple... And it both feels like maybe that is a barrier that's going to be really tricky to overcome. The Digital Markets Act kind of tells Apple that it has to open up its ecosystems to everyone. So therefore, it's worried about anything that can peer at your photos within your phone, and having to open that to a third-party publisher would be an issue. So maybe that's part of it. But it also feels like a slap in the face to the EU because, let's face it, Apple wasn't very keen on the EU's new regulations to begin with. So, I mean, it is postponed for the EU and it certainly won't be coming anytime soon. The other thing is that Siri AI will only launch on devices with English language installed to begin with. And again, at first we thought, does that mean US English? Now, that was originally based on the fact that Apple Intelligence first launched only in US English. And Amazon's Alexa only Plus only launched in US English originally, and things like that. But we have had it confirmed that it's all English language variants. So it will come to the UK at the same time as it goes to the US, for example.
And you can use it on older phone models, right?
Right. This is very complicated. And again, was a bit of a vague message in during WWC's keynote, is that Apple, the new iOS 27 will work from the iPhone 11 and up, which was a massive surprise, because normally they ditch at least a year's worth of phones every time there's an iteration.
Yeah.
But this time it's going to work on every phone that can use iOS 26. So that's iPhone 11, iPhone SE second generation, I think that starts that as well. So anything from there and up. However, it has been clarified since that Siri AI and Apple Intelligence will not. That's just the other iOS 27 features. Siri AI and Apple Intelligence will work on iPhone 15 Pro and up.
Because it needs that. Because the Pro doesn't have the chip, but it has enough of a powerful chip to handle it.
Exactly. And basically, it was anything that you worked with Apple Intelligence, because Apple Intelligence was locked to 15 Pro and up. But there is another caveat to that, in the fact that Siri AI and Apple Intelligence will work on device on some phones, but will need to work off device on others. And by off device, I mean it needs to access the cloud. So therefore, it will need to use your data connection if you have a certain phone, but on some devices, you'll be able to just use it offline as well. So it needs to be essentially a 17 Pro or above to work on device. And anything lower than that, it will have to just constantly access the cloud.
So that hasn't changed since they launched the 17 series. And because I remember my son had a 15 Pro at the time and was quite pleased to find that because he had the Pro variant, he was still able to
be enabled.
That those features actually never landed is by the by. Interesting. It just made me realise, though, I remember around that time that when they were handing off to the cloud, when they were predicting that they were going to hand off to the cloud, when they first launched this 3 years ago, as you said at the start of your chat there, they'd done a deal with ChatGPT, with OpenAI.
Yes.
So isn't that interesting? So not only, Susie, they're going with Gemini.
Yeah.
They're sacking off OpenAI.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting?
They've moved over to Google's large language models, LLMs, instead to help train its systems. But there is a slight confusion in the fact that some people believe that essentially Siri AI is just powered by Gemini. It's not. It's used Gemini models, and it's using some of Google's cloud compute to help Apple's private cloud compute, which is what they call it. But what it is actually is it's only using the models, but the actual systems, the things that actually work on your phone, the new features, the way that it uses those models is entirely Apple's own. So Apple will continue to develop away from Gemini, just using all the training and the sort of the clever back end stuff that you never have to worry about. That was from the Gemini models.
Just before you go, what about the slight reveal of the iPhone Ultra that's been discovered in the code?
Yeah, there was that was one excellent piece that I spotted the day after, is that somebody looked through. Now, Apple always releases a developer beta of all of its latest software. And straight after WWDC keynote, it released iOS 27 for developers only. I mean, it's full of bugs, and I would never advise anyone put it on their iPhone at this stage, because it could break certain things that you use on a daily basis. But what they did is they dug through the code and they found two references that really hint to something that we've been talking about for quite a while, but never really knew was coming. And that is the iPhone Ultra, which is Apple's first ever foldable iPhone. And in the code, it mentioned I think there was a reference to a multiple screen piece of text. So that iOS 27 could work across multiple screens at once. And I think there was something else about a folding mechanism. And obviously, while it didn't mention iPhone Ultra directly, and it didn't mention the iPhone Fold, which was the previous name for it, it is basically they are setting the stall for it, and it kind of confirms that it's coming in September. But also on top of that, and even more keen-eyed T3 readers actually found within the video, and if you go back and watch the keynote address, on the table while they were talking about some of the iOS 27 features, there were dummy models or dummy builds of things like folding mechanisms, and just on the table. And Apple often does this; it will hide little Easter eggs within its keynotes. And there were, and I mean, they are vague as hell, and you could really. You could say, I mean, we're looking into it. We're maybe reading more into it than we actually should. But come on, there were little sort of like research and development tweaks, little sort of like little hints and clues that this is the iPhone Ultra's time to shine. I mean, it'll be $2,500 and nobody will afford it, but it'll be exciting.
It feels like a good note to end on, Rick.
Excellent.
Thank you for your brain, and thank you for downloading all of that for us. And it's great to see you.
Thanks, Rick.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Well, that's it for another episode of the Gadget Show podcast.
Yes, a massive thank you to Rick for joining us, and of course, to all of you for listening, watching and getting involved.
And before we disappear off into the digital sunset, we'd like to give a special shout out to the brilliant people who support us on Patreon. And if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see their names on the screen right now.
These wonderful humans help us make the podcast bigger, better and occasionally slightly more sensible.
Well, occasionally. So to every single Patreon supporter, thank you very much. You're an important part of what we're trying to build here.
Yeah, and if you'd like to join them, you'll get a few nice perks along the way.
Including ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, bonus content, access to our archive, and entry to our draw to win £5,000 to spend at CEX.
You can find out more at patreon.com/thegadgetshow. We'll be back next week with more tech news, more gadgets, and no doubt at least one piece of technology that'll have us reaching for our wallets.
Until then, thank you so much for your company.
See you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.